Oh, hi. It's me. Just a quick reminder that Valentine's Day is around the corner, and you know what that means. Time for you to get in trouble because you screwed up. I'm joking. If you're looking for the perfect treat for your sweetheart, Sunset Lake Sabadell is having a sweet sale on all their tasty edible products. Now through February 9th, you can use the code VALENTINE26. And you will save 30% on all Sunset Lake's gummies, chocolate fudge, hello, and even their Farmer's Roast infused coffee beans. These make great gifts because they're delicious and they also have utility, as in the Sabadell. In addition to the gummies that we all know and love, they've also released a limited edition citrus flavor of their popular Vibe gummies.
You want to vibe with your sweetheart on the night?
Yeah, it's a little THC in those Vibe gummies. Maybe you get the pre-date jitters. Maybe you get a little nervous. One of these new citrus Vibe gummies can help put your mind at ease. Or maybe you want to bring your date a box of sweets. Sunset Lake's full spectrum chocolate fudge is the perfect choice. I have partaken in the Vibe gummies on many occasions. It is the perfect amount of THC for me. Loosens me up a little bit. I don't, that's when I start to unbutton the second button of my shirt.
Wow. Not safe for work.
Exactly. Sorry. The code again is Valentine26. That's Valentine26. No spaces. People love Sabadell as a gift. I've given it a lot of it, actually. It's Valentine26, no spaces. At sunsetlakesabadell.com, you will save 30% on all their edibles. The sale runs through February 9th at 11:59 p.m. So you got about a week. As always, see the site for full terms and conditions. Head over there. We'll put the link in the podcast and YouTube description with that coupon code. Now time for the show.
With Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2026. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Jamie Holmes, writer and author of The Free and the Dead, The Untold Story of the Black Seminole Chief, The Indigenous Rebel, and America's Forgotten War. Also on the program, day three of a partial shutdown, Republicans teeing up a vote today. Meanwhile, a judge temporarily blocks Trump's rescission of temporary protected status for 330,000 Haitians. Thousands of Epstein docs taken down after they supposedly inadvertently identified victims. Meanwhile, a lot of people have a lot of things to answer for. Fulton County to sue the Trump regime over seizure of the 2020 election records. This after reports Tulsi Gabbard, who was sort of oddly on that trip, called Trump from the election site so he could talk to the FBI agents.
Put me on speaker.
I just happened to be in Atlanta.
This as Donald Trump calls for Republicans to take over federal elections. Well, just in the states I lost.
Seems bad.
Not all of them.
They're like 15 places.
Federal thugs in Minnesota, now outfitted with body cams, that come with still complete lack of accountability. French prosecutors raid X offices as part of the investigation into Grok's nude generations and algorithms. Maryland House passes a gerrymander for one more Democratic seat. Unclear if it gets Maryland Senate passage. Bill and Hillary Clinton, remember them? They've agreed to testify before Congress about Epstein. Maybe because he's not really featured prominently in this latest document dump. France issues warrants against two French Israelis charged with obstructing humanitarian aid to Gaza. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is
Newsday Tuesday, kind of, not really, because we have a guest, but excited about the guest.
Yeah, well, we'll cover some news as well. But
yes.
There you go.
I mean,
it's Tuesday Newsday. We just do it because it rhymes.
Yes, exactly. As we've talked about, once the Trump 2.0 regime started, the amount of news that accumulates over the weekend makes it quite difficult for us to keep to our branding on the schedule front.
The format has been certainly tested over the course of the past, I want to say, 12 and a half months. We're still figuring it out. And I don't know that we will actually figure it out. I have a feeling that's sort of the nature of the era we are in. That's where we're at. Somebody's asking, are we going to cover the Shartgate?
We did yesterday. And
did we?
We did.
We didn't think it was that
impressive.
It sounded like electronic disturbance.
Yeah. Right.
You know, maybe there's other angles.
I mean, I do not think we need to get further into this story. Something stinks.
We'll wait. We'll wait for the Trump pooping cam. So we'll wait for that. In the meantime,
laundry cam.
Ed Martin, you'll recall him. He was at one time the Washington, D.C. U.S. attorney. He is the one who got together with Pulte, who was over at the FHA. And they started doing all these hit jobs on people like Lisa Cook and Tish James by combing through their mortgage and trying to find some problem in their mortgages. Ed Martin has been demoted and is now down to like his portfolio is just like pardon lawyer at this point. Unclear what that means at the DOJ, but it does suggest that there has been some power balance within the DOJ that has changed. I don't know how relevant it is, really, because it's really just like one set of cronies versus another set of cronies. But we haven't seen Pam Bondi out very much as of late. And it's unclear whether that's because maybe she screwed up something with the Epstein files, or maybe she's out of favor with Donald Trump at the moment. But the guy that's been sent out a lot is Todd Blanche. He is the number two at the DOJ, Deputy Attorney General. And just to remind you, it is February 3rd. So this time plus 3 weeks last year, he was Donald Trump's top defense attorney.
And he was the guy that paid a little visit to Ghislaine Maxwell, and she told him, oh, Trump's not implicated, pretty much. And then, coincidentally, she moved to a low-security prison. She got a puppy. Things worked out quite well for
against
her.
Against all Bureau of Prison rules. So that just gives you a sense of what Todd Blanche's job is. And he made the mistake of acknowledging that on ABC's This Week. Sunday. This is number,
four.
This is number, I'm sorry. This is number three.
This is on then Fox News.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is on Fox News. To give you a sense of what his job is, this is what, he said on Fox News last night regarding the Epstein files.
Well, some of the people we saw on camera at the rallies. Is there any chance that any of these individuals who partied with Epstein and engaged in, relations with minors will be prosecuted?
Pause it for 1 second. I just want you to remember how she asked that question. Who partied with Epstein and engaged in relationships with minors, are they going to get in any type of trouble? And you're going to be very surprised to which part of that sentence Todd Blanche did not hear.
Relations with minors will be prosecuted. Well, any look, chance?
I'll never say no. And we will always investigate any evidence of misconduct. But as you know, it is not a crime to party with Mr. Epstein. And so as horrible as it's not a crime to email with Mr. Epstein. And some of these men may have done horrible things. And if we have evidence that allows us to prosecute them, you better believe we will. But it's also the kind of thing that the American people need to understand, that it isn't a crime to party with Mr. Epstein. It isn't a crime to have
lunch.
Didn't
look like that's all that was going on some of those photos. I mean, if the photos could speak, some of them look pretty bad.
That's right. And unfortunately, photos can't speak. And so we need witnesses and we need
evidence. Are there videotapes that you all have? Or
what do you mean you need witnesses? You have dozens and dozens of victims who are saying, we are willing to cooperate right now.
And photos don't necessarily speak, but they sort of show. That's what they do. But just in case you were wondering why he goes out and says this stuff, the 2 + 2 in this is, two is he was Donald Trump's, defense attorney. And the other, two in this is that in many ways, he's still Donald Trump's defense attorney. This is him just 2 days ago.
America safe again. We're working hard every day, and those handful of investigations or cases you just show don't change that.
Those indictments of James Comey and Letitia James came after the president explicitly said they're guilty as hell and justice must be served right now. They came after career attorneys refused to bring the indictments, and both cases have been dismissed.
I mean, I don't know what it means to come after people. I mean, listen, if you're a prosecutor in the Department of Justice, you are expected to effectuate this administration's priorities. Like every single prosecutor in every administration, there are some prosecutors within the department who have chosen to leave. They don't want to do that. That is their right. That is fine. But if you're going to work in this department, you are going to execute on the president's priorities, and that's what we do. And yes, there are cases that have been dismissed by judges. They're under appeal. That's what happens in our system, and that doesn't make the case is wrong or right. It just means that they've been dismissed and they're under appeal.
Well, you just actually made my point right there. You said it's the president's priorities. The president calls for them publicly to be prosecuted, says they're guilty as hell, and then they're prosecuted.
No, that's not the president's priorities. That's a truth that he sent out. The president's priorities are executing on making America safe again. And that's what we're doing. And so when we go to prosecutors and we say, you are going to do violent crime, you are going to do
I don't think we need to hear any more at that point.
How would you define a priority? So the truth, what he says on Truth Social, is distinct in some way from his opinions in other areas or his agenda? That seems quite odd.
His priorities are a function of how they are communicated. And it's just a total coincidence that they went after multiple people with completely loser cases that people resigned rather than take, that were dismissed summarily, that took multiple grand juries to try and find an indictment. And even at that point, they had to lie about what they got indicted and lie to the grand jury and to the judge. But they weren't listening to what the president said. It was just a coincidence because all he had put out was a truth post.
It's incredible that we're living through this moment in history where it's just basically taken as a given that the Department of Justice is going to basically function as a retribution vehicle for the pettiest man alive, who's a pedophile protector at the very least, is declining before our very eyes. It's crumbling empire stuff, as is even this Epstein story, where you see how, like, he was a global elite and a connector and a fixer, and his influence network was very much within the crumbling world order that even Carney talked about, where it's like Israeli intelligence, the military industrial complex, like U.S. financial firms and that kind of corruption. And these people being exposed in many ways is unmasking that like elite, that's transnational elite that rules us all outside of nation states.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein?
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more about the Epstein stuff going forward on top of everything else.
I want Democrats to pull on the thread about QAnon potentially being a right-wing psychological operation, by the way. The fact that that Epstein met with the 4chan founder and was working this closely with Steve Bannon, it very much feels like that whole online phenomenon that radicalized so many online young men and conservatives was about deflecting from Trump's and Epstein's connections. And if Democrats take back power, they should really look into that.
Also, the Brexit stuff. Also, people should look into that. Epstein talking about buying on the way down after things collapse because of the Brexit vote. This stuff is... it's crazy. This blows the Nixon tapes out of the water.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big Nixon tapes fan.
And I think to Emma's point, the way that this guy moved through the world and the people that he was talking, I mean, Larry Summers, for instance, has had as much influence on our economic policy over the past 15 years, maybe a little bit more, 17, as any individual in the country, maybe. And this guy was sort of trading different favors, including like seeking advice on how to date girls.
So pathetic.
But pathetic, but also like it just shows that there is just an immense amount of corruption built into the system, and it is Matt Stoller had an interesting thread about how this is indicative of so many failed institutions across the board that allowed for someone like this to come in and short circuit all of the supposed trappings of the meritocracy and of the, I guess, the rules-based system.
And I saw Ryan Grimm's reply just really quickly saying it's no coincidence that this system that Epstein exploited, it really began with Iran-Contra. And with their involvement in arms dealing and stuff like that, that is where this all, you know, I think you can trace it all
and
back
the failure
to
of accountability. I mean, and we saw that sort of like crumble a little bit with Nixon. He got pardoned ultimately, all, you know, bygones be bygones. But it was Iran-Contra where we really started to see the failure of these institutions to hold people accountable. But we will talk more about this in the coming days. We have a couple of sponsors, and after which we'll talk to Jamie Holmes, writer, author of The Free and the Dead, The Untold Story of the Black Seminole Chief, The Indigenous Rebel, and America's Forgotten War. Raise your hand if you've been putting off a dental cleaning. Thank you.
Thank you too.
Brian.
I was once told that I may be from New England, but my teeth are from Old England.
Annual checkup, doctor's appointments. I know all you guys.
Yes.
When something feels off, you're tempted to just go online and self-diagnose. But this year, make yourself a promise. Go see a doctor. Because it's so much easier now with ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website that helps you find and book high-quality in-network doctors so you can find someone you love. We're talking about booking in-network appointments at more than 150,000 providers across all 50 states. Doesn't matter whether you're looking for a dermatologist, a dentist, primary care, eye care, or some of the other 200-plus specialties offered on ZocDoc, you can easily search by specialty or symptom to build the care team that's right for you. You want to see a doctor in person? Great. Prefer a video visit? You can do that too. When you're ready, you can see their real-time availability and click to book instantly. Their calendar pops up. There's no going back and forth with the person who works at the front desk. And can you do Wednesday? Well, why don't you tell me the appointments you have? No, why don't you tell me all the free time you have? It's awful. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen very quickly, typically within 24 to 72 hours booking. You can even score same-day day appointments. The beauty of ZocDoc is you can also see, do they take my insurance? Does this doctor have a good bedside manner? I mean, on and on and on. I used ZocDoc when I was on the road. I had a dental emergency. I've already talked about this. I found a great dentist. Bingo, bango. It was super easy to do. Both Emma and Matt have used the service to find doctors locally. And Brian. Mm-hmm. Brian's going to go see a dentist.
Can I do that via Zoom?
That's literally like the one. I want to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode and making it virtually impossible for Brian to say that he can't find a dentist. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/majority to find and instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/majority. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message, and we will put that link in the podcast and YouTube description. Also sponsoring the show today, I use this product like I don't know. There's not a day I go by where I'm not using one type of this product. Talking about Blue Land, a couple years ago, I was like, I need to have less plastic recycling. It started with that because you're in an apartment, you got a small little thing, and then one thing of laundry detergent from the supermarket, and
it's like your whole recycling bin.
And also, it takes up such huge amounts of space in your cabinets. But then also, you come to realize, like, we have a huge amount of microplastics in us. And not only is plastic ruining the oceans, something like 70% of all plastic that is in the planet now has been produced in the past like 10 or 15 years. It's nuts. So I made the switch to Blue Land across all the cleaning products in my house. We're talking in Blue Land, we should say, on top of it being like, either in powder form or like little capsules form. And reusable bottles. It's a whole system of cleaning. On top of it, like helping get rid of plastic and saving space and frankly money. Blue Land is 100% microplastic free. EPA Safer Choice certified formulas are safe to use around my kids, my cat, my plants. They clean just as well as any other product I've ever had. Blue Land is a certified B Corp, certified cruelty-free by Leaping Bunny. It is trusted in over 1 million homes, including mine. They have tablets for your dishwasher. They have dish soap. They have hand soap. They have three types of everything cleaner, window cleaner, and antibacterial for the bathroom cleaner. You just drop a little tablet in. You can store like months of cleaning fluid in like a little tiny box like this. They also have toilet bombs. I mean, all their products are fantastic. I use all of those. Probably more. I just can't think off the top. Oh, laundry detergent tablets. They're great. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners right now. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/majority. You don't want to miss this. blueland.com/majority, 15% off. That's blueland.com/majority. Get 15% off. We'll put the link in the code in the podcast and YouTube description. All right, quick break. Then we'll be talking to Jamie Holmes, writer, author of The Free and the Dead, The Untold Story of the Black Seminole Chief, the Indigenous Rebel, and America's Forgotten War. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Pleasure to welcome to the program Jamie Holmes, writer and author of The Free and the Dead, The Untold Story of the Black Seminole Chief, the Indigenous Rebel, and America's Forgotten War. They're the book in actual, like, book form. Here.
Old-fashioned.
Very old-fashioned. Well, it's a history book. And so, Jamie, welcome to the program. Let's just start with, like, you know, why don't we just discuss, like, why, how you came upon this story? The Seminole Wars are just not ones that, frankly, I feel like we cover, you know, this is not something that my kid is going through high school is ever going to hear about, as far as I can tell. What was it that drew you to this?
Thank you, first of all, for having me on. I don't remember what I was Googling, but I came upon a letter to the editor in the New York Times. I want to say it was written in 1991. It wasn't recent. And it said something to the effect of, there was a rainbow coalition in Florida in the 1800s between Native and African Americans that fought off the U.S. Army for 40 years, and nobody knows the story. Because of our Eurocentric view of history. That's what sort of set me off. And then I began to dig into the archives and what had been written about it. To your point, you know, if you look in U.S. history books today, what you'll really see is usually you'll see a description that says the Seminole Osceola was the leader of the war and he passed away. And there's a few sentences on it. Osceola was not a Seminole. He was not the leader. The story is so much richer and so much more interesting than it gets credit for. So I set out to tell the twin story of who Osceola was. I wanted to get behind the mythology of it and see who he really was, the historical person, not the mythologized character. And then the second person I started off focusing on was the Black Seminole Chief Abraham, whose Indian title is Sawanak Toskanuki, or Shawnee Warrior. That was my jumping off point. And then later I began to learn, as I got deeper into the research, the importance of the Miccosukee Chief Sam Jones, who I focus on in the back half of the book. And I didn't realize his importance when I started off.
All right, well, set the table for us. We're in the 1810s, 20s. The United States has essentially purchased Florida at that point, but it is, I want to say it's like the Wild West, but I mean, it's sort of like the Wild West on some level. Yeah. And Andrew Jackson, who was president at that point, is dreaming of his retirement home, and so not really paying that much attention. Just to set the table for us and how this sort of story begins.
Yeah. So in American history books, there are three Seminole Wars. The first is 1817, 1818, 1835, 1842, and then the third, which is the focus of this book. And then the third is 1855, 1858. The Seminole Tribe of Florida refers to that entire period as the Long War, a period of colonial aggression. This in 1835, where the story really starts from, every territory east of the Mississippi River is a state, except for Florida and Michigan. So Florida is lagging. It was Spanish. It's formally U.S. territory in 1821. Florida doesn't become a state until 1845. There's only 35,000 people in the Florida territory at this time. 45% of those are enslaved people, and about 5,000 indigenous people known to the colonists as the Seminoles, but in reality constituting a number of different tribes, the Seminoles among them. And yeah, in 1830, Andrew Jackson signs the Indian Removal Act into law, which nationalizes what was a more haphazard policy of removing families from their homes, achieved through coercive treaties and military actions and settlers crowding out the land. And so the story is the resistance of the Seminoles and their allies to this act of force removal. More or less, they say, I'm really your friend. You have to leave. And if you don't leave, we're going to go to war and we're going to force you out. And additionally, this attempts by private citizens under the sanction of people in the U.S. government at high levels to enslave the Black Seminoles and transfer them to private plantations, private forced labor camps.
How many during the course of like that, over the course of maybe the 15 years in there, I guess it is, how many indigenous people, most of my understanding, go to Oklahoma at that point or are forced to Oklahoma?
That's right. Yeah, the population is estimated at 4,000 to 5,000 at the start of the war. In 1858, at the end of the Third Seminole War, the estimates that are about 600 people remain in the Everglades under the leadership of the Seminole chief William Bowlegs, Billy Bowlegs, also known as Holatomiko, and Chief Abiaka, also known as Sam Jones. So nearly everyone went west. But there was a core resistance that did win, that was unconquered, that never signed any surrender. And those descendants are still in Florida today, and that's their heritage, the unconquered people.
So let's start with Osceola, who is was miscategorized, like you say, as Seminole, but was in fact Creek. Tell us about him.
He comes out of the Red Sticks in what is now Alabama and Georgia. And his boyhood, he would have seen this split in the Creek people. So the Seminoles break off from the Creek Confederacy or the Muscogee people and come down in several waves, 1750s, 1790s, 1814, around then. And there's a split in the Creek people, and there's a war, 1813, 1814, between the Red Sticks, where Osceola comes out of, and the White Sticks, who are allied with then General Jackson. And there's a Battle of Horseshoe Bend in which 800 Red Sticks are killed, and widows and children, Osceola among them, make their way down into Florida. Osceola's probably around 10 years old at this time, if you date his birth to 1804, which some people do. And he has a memory of this loss. He watched his people divided. He watched this, you know, known of in any case, this brutal defeat. And then the general who was responsible for it becomes the president of the United States, sends down a functionary into Florida to give him this spiel about friendship. Really, they're trying to save money. They want them off the land cheaply without a war. And he is oriented towards payback, righteously so. He gets it. He does pay with his life. He dies of some ailment. We're not sure exactly what. In American newspapers and even abroad, he becomes the face of the war, and he becomes one of the most famous Native Americans in American history, in American history textbooks. Why is this? That's a question all on its own. It's at the start of the war, he's not a Creek. He's loyal to the Miccosukee chief, Sam Jones. Why? How did he become the face of the war? So part of the book deals with that. And as far as I could tell, it's because of a few actions that he is responsible for. He killed Wiley Thompson. He was a prominent voice in the meetings, the negotiations that they had. He was quite vocal. And he is useful to a degree to Americans who are trying to sell this as a war rather than a forced eviction of families, including women and children. It's a much better story to say, here's a warrior, and this is a war, and he's brave, or he's whatever he is, he's quote unquote savage. However you frame it, whether you're sympathetic or not, a warrior and a war is a better story than what was actually done, which was this sort of brutal forced immigration.
It sounds very familiar. I mean, it literally, you could be describing Gaza today, the way it's described and the campaign of ethnic cleansing. But I don't have too much to add to that. Just wanted to point that out.
Well, and this is sort of another iteration of sort of it's analogous to the lost cause, like the yep. way that history wants to remember these things. It makes it much more palatable if this was two belligerent groups versus, one of ethnic cleansing. And we should just say that Wiley Thompson that you mentioned was the Indian agent sent Jackson's so-called Indian agent sent down to, try and convince him to just leave, essentially.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about Abraham I'm not going to be able to say his other name, but I'm not even going to try. What are the implications of like there being freedmen? Like, were they freedmen or were they who were these people?
Yeah. So again, to your point about what stories get told and which don't, there's a history of writers who discuss this story who more or less ignore the Black Seminole story as well. The population is comprised of several different quote-unquote categories. There's Black Seminole royalty who are formally free, who have papers to document their freedom. That includes Abraham and his family and a Black Seminole. I can't forget if he's a chief or sub-chief. Tony Barnett, I think he's a chief, and his family. Of the estimated 500 Black Seminoles who are there at the time, probably about 100 in these ratios. There are several different estimates of these ratios, but as best we know, 20% or 100 of those are servants. According to the old Muscogee way, this is not chattel enslavement. It's, as far as we know, the only requirement of this form of slavery is that you pay a portion of your crop, of your corn, as tribute, which sounds quite a bit like a tax to me, but not enslavement. And then 400 or 80% of those are self-emancipated, either people who freed themselves by escaping the plantations in Florida or further north, or children of POW, prisoners of wars, who were captured, some by the Creeks, who allied with the British in the Revolutionary War. Their children, by the old Muscogee rules, could be full members of the tribe. But in essence, you have, when Florida drafts the state constitution, there's a clause in there, it wasn't passed this way, but that's how it was drafted, trying to ban all free Black people from entering the state. So unlike when the Spanish had it and you had three classes and a large population of free people of color, what Florida is trying to institute is really a two-tier system of white settlers and enslaved people. So there's really no space for a group of 500 free Black people of in the interior of Florida. So what they do is they pretend to be enslaved. They all pretend to have been purchased by the Seminoles. And if you look at their rights, the rights under chattel slavery generally, and these rules vary, movement is restricted. You need a pass. You cannot accumulate vast wealth. You can be sold and separated as property. And after 1831, after Nat Turner's rebellion, there are laws which ban the ability to teach an enslaved person to read. So if you compare them to what the rights the Black Seminoles had, there was a law, according to Wiley Thompson, Jackson's Indian agent, that they could not be sold. Now, laws are broken, but there was a law against it. They traveled freely. They had vast livestock, and they were knowledgeable. Some of them were trilingual, bilingual. They were worldly. So all of that, and by the way, there's the governor of the territory of Florida is writing a letter. In one letter, he says they are slaves, but in name. So there's several references. Like, I know a Seminole chief. He owns 80 quote unquote enslaved people. He is none the better for owning them. He's poor. He can't even afford to feed his own family. So the majority of them were free and pretending to have been purchased by the Seminoles for self-protection. Chief Abraham owned his son, Renty. So that tells you that Renty is not his, it's not an enslaved person. This is protective ownership.
Well, how did that, like, how was that arrangement made? Like, I mean, was it, it's, you know, like, how sophisticated were they about creating, did they create documents? I mean, like, what would have been the requirements for the Seminole to prove that they owned these freedmen? And how was that arrangement, like, struck? Or was it just that the Seminole know, like, we can see the writing on the wall and we just need as many sort of allies as we can get?
Yeah. So there's an old Spanish policy beginning in the late 1600s, which would recognize civil rights in exchange for military service. I think you had to say you were Catholic, but enslaved people who escaped down into Spanish Florida could say they were Catholic, fight in the militia, and they would recognize their civil rights. So there's a history in Florida, and the British do this as well, of exchanging civil rights for soldiery. You know, this is in the United States today. You can get a fast track to citizenship if you serve in the armed forces. So what it looks like is that part of the story is that the Seminoles just adopt this policy. We are welcome. A gun is a gun in Florida. Come down. We'll grow our military, and you'll be offered some protection under Abraham and in these allied villages. But the situation, the question you're asking is, how do you prove, the answer is that they can't. So if you're a POW or a child of a POW taken in a raid, or if you've liberated yourself, there's no documentation on you. So this is, in a way, is a double-edged sword, because nobody can prove that they own you, but also you're vulnerable. There's a book called Rogue's Paradise, which talks about how kind of lawless Florida was at the time. There are a lot of profiteers, there are speculators, there are people who see Black Seminole population as a vulnerable population and who are making claims on them. The former Indian agent Gad Humphreys illegally enslaves 29 Black Seminoles on his private plantation. So in Abraham's case, there's a newspaper article which says that his freedom papers traced to Alabama. Later on, he says there's credible evidence that he was born among the Seminoles. He's asked directly in 1852. He says, I don't know where I was born, but I was born among the Seminoles. The reporter says that that language, which is the Muscogee language, is his mother tongue. So I believe that that document was forged, because you would have to take that document and go to the cities or the army bases, and you would want it recorded in the record books. So there is a record book in which Abraham, you know, must have presented that document to secure his formal emancipation. But the lack of documentation is a constant problem for them throughout this period, and when they travel west to the Indian Territory, what became Oklahoma.
That documentation became a problem because they're going through territories or say states at that point that are... when they see a Black person, they're like, oh, you're a runaway slave.
The claims on them continue, even when they head west. Some of those claims are being made by Creeks who have adopted the ways of chattel slavery. Some of them are quote-unquote half-breeds, right? You have settlers having children. And some of those, part of the schism in the Creek Nation is that you have a group who are starting to adopt the ways of chattel slavery. So some of those claims are being made on the Black Seminoles by Creeks in the West. But yeah, that happens. That's something. There's a group of them that actually go down to Mexico, which slavery has been outlawed, to escape those persistent claims.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm wondering, in the dealings with the Americans, were you able to trace some sort of understanding of, like, how dealing with Spanish colonizers versus the Americans versus what, you know, Andrew Jackson was trying to do here? How did the Seminoles differentiate in their dealings with these two colonizing groups? And is there anything that, you know, informs the other?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a historian of early Florida named Jane Landers at Vanderbilt. She did an interview. She said something like, "It's difficult for the American audience to understand that neither the Seminoles nor the Spanish nor the Black Seminoles thought of themselves as slaves. Only the Americans did."
Right.
I found that they were very discerning. So first of all, when America takes over in 1821, a lot of free people of color leave and they go to the Bahamas. They know what it means. They know that the relative freedom under Spanish rule is not going to persist, and they exit. At the beginning of the war, Black Seminole envoys went to the settlers that they liked, that they had good relationships with, and warned them. So they were discerning in that sense. There's another description of attacks on shipwrecks on the coast, in which there's a French ship that wrecks on the coast and they're spared because they're not American. So the Seminoles know very well that this, the ideas about skin color that the Americans are bringing are quite different. There's a Claudio Sant, who's an expert on the Creek Nation and generally on indigenous people. He has a scholarly article which is titled something like, "The British are of a mind to make slaves of them all." So this is what the Americans inherited. It really was much more brutal and polarized idea of what we still call race that they were bringing.
All right, let's move forward in the story to John Horse and to tell us about him.
John Horse is a Seminole sub chief. He is Afro-Indigenous. His mother was a Black Seminole. His father was a Seminole, we think, one of the tribesmen. There's a lore about John Horse because he's one of the people that travel to Mexico, I want to say in 1850, to escape these claims that I was talking about. There's a story of him when he's young. He's also known as Gopher John. His Indian name is Hokepis Hajo. There's a story of him selling the same two gopher turtles to a military officer again and again. The officer puts them in the cage and they escape and he sells them back the next day. There's a lot of lore around him. The scholar Kenneth Porter, who has written about this and is sort of the source of the strand of historical research that focuses on the Black Seminoles on the left, writes extensively about John Horse. I don't write much about him. I don't follow him much. It's mostly Abraham. But he's one of the figures, and he also commands 15 warriors. So he's one of the fighters as well. And he was involved in the jailbreak in November 1837, in which 20 prisoners of the U.S. Army escape out of the Castelo de San Marcos, this massive Spanish fort in St. Augustine, by climbing out of this small loophole in the wall and making a rope out of their bed covers. And two women were involved in that escape as well during the night. This very dramatic escape in late November 1837.
And I guess lastly, where do we end up? What is the in the towards the end of this, as the sort of like the we remain with 600 Seminole in the how was it just a question of we're moving into a different part of Florida and we're out of like eyesight, but how do we get to the point of where I guess the Seminole just no longer represent a threat to the newly created state?
Yeah, the U.S. government more or less gives up and declares victory. It's sort of a unilateral surrender. What happens in Florida is, so in the Second Seminole War, there's about 1,500 regular deaths, soldiers who die. Only about 330 of those are combat deaths. So the majority of deaths are happening because of Florida, because they're getting sick. Malaria, disease unknown, is often recorded. What happens in 58 and the way in which Sam Jones, Chief of Biaka, was able to wear down the army was because they set up towns in the Everglades on these hammocks, these kind of tree islands, and they would carve out places for villages and places to grow things and places for cattle and to live within these that you couldn't see from the outside. And they had a network of canoes. So whenever one spot was discovered, they would go to another spot. And the army couldn't catch them. And so it became a test of wills. It became a war of attrition where you're sort of wandering around, dying of disease, not finding anyone. And this was land that the settlers couldn't farm on anyway. The Everglades, even after it was drained, a lot of that land is not farmable. So the argument, it became a question of to what degree is this worth the cost in lives and in treasure. And the government has just decided it wasn't. And, you know, in 42, when the Second Seminole War ends, Tyler makes a speech and he says something like, we've won and it's very noble of us to leave those remaining there because it's a noble restraint. But really they were worn down and the country was tired of the war. And so they just gave up.
I mean, in many respects, it's sort of like our first Vietnam. And the parallels there are pretty striking. And what ultimately became, as we go through forward, of not just of Jones, but I mean of those Seminole who are basically hiding in the Everglades or unreachable because, you know, the land they have at that point is not worth to the colonial project what the costs associated would be, essentially, at least at that time.
Yeah, the Seminole tribe of Florida and the Miccosukees of Florida today, those are the descendants of those survivors. And there's a Seminole Nation in Oklahoma, too. So they, you know, in the 1950s, I think 100 years later or something, there is some ceremonial signing in which the state of Florida and the tribes and the chiefs sort of agree to put the past behind them. But, you know, they exit the Everglades. Part of the Everglades is drained, and their oral histories are recorded in the 1950s. And that it becomes the Seminole tribe of Florida and the Miccosukees of Florida.
It's a fascinating story. Jamie Holmes, writer, author, The Free and the Dead, The Untold Story of the Black Seminole Chief, The Indigenous Rebel, and America's Forgotten War. Thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. That was fun. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Emma.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Head into the
fun half.
Fun half. I don't know. It's going to call it the despondent hour.
Yes.
It just seems like a desecration, but you go ahead.
What was that about again?
That was when people were asking about the Epstein files after a bunch of people died in a flood in Texas.
Oh my God! Right. You know, Trump, who respects the sanctity of all
really
of those
things. I definitely thought about all those people that died because of the negligence of Texas public authorities not doing sirens for floods. I thought about them a lot.
Like after the L.A. wildfires, when he went there and just kept talking about sweeping up the the leaves, he's just, I mean, natural disasters can't conjure much from him.
We'll get into this, but I should just tell you that I have on my calendar.
Oh, yes.
Let me just double check here. But where did I have it? Oh, yesterday I had Trump getting his juice. So I don't know. He was around this weekend, though, right? But is he out in public today?
Did some phone interviews I saw. Oh, did Bongino?
But yeah,
he did a press
on the phone.
In the Oval Office today.
He did.
Bongino's sitting down
on video, yeah. I think.
That's the notable change. Is he keeps doing these press conferences from the Oval Office every time, so he doesn't have to get up.
Well, every also American so they can clean up they can clean up after.
Yeah. I thought we weren't buying that.
I'm not buying it.
It's just fun.
Let's put it this way.
I'm selling it.
I'm not saying
that clip.
Yeah, I agree.
Is indicative of him pooping his pants. But I'm also not saying that it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just from the way that he waddles, you can tell he's got a diaper on and there's probably extra baggage.
Somebody made the point that, like, when we played that yesterday, we didn't do the video all the way through because everybody gets ushered out of there immediately after that. Because he does say at the end, I watched the tape again, just, you know, out of curiosity. He does go, oh, that's great, that's great. Okay, everybody. Okay, thank you. We're all good. Okay, everybody out. It just kept like it. And, you
Susie
know,
Wiles walks in with a big bag.
Right, look, right. Susie, open that window for me.
We've all been in compromised situations.
No,
and
not
if you have the ability, if you have the ability to say, like, okay, it's good seeing you, everybody. Goodbye. I got a lot of stuff to do.
That's
which is
mom.
What he says. It did feel like he was trying to get everybody out of the room.
Maybe,
but also, like,
yeah.
Well, you know, one way, if you really need people out of the room, is you stand up and you usher people out. But if you can't stand up, you start waving like, okay, everybody go, everybody go.
I shouldn't even step to you on this. Like, you have a sixth sense with fecal matters.
That's actually true. I can pick up on, like,
I think that's one of the regular senses.
Yeah.
Through the TV, though?
Folks.
This is what I'm saying. This is your superpower. Some people can shapeshift and fly. You can tell when somebody shit their pants.
I mean, I have one or two other talents like that. Also, I can tell when people pee themselves, but that's much easier.
That's a lot easier.
Folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. If you want to more of this great content, join themajorityreport.com. It's your donations that help the show survive and thrive. And if you listen to the show a couple of times a week or you watch the show a couple of times a week, become a member. You not only get the free show free of commercials, but you also get to IM us in the fun half, things like Punch Drunk Pulpit, who just wrote Sam Smelter.
I was, Sam Fecal Man. Sam Fecal Man. That's anti-Semitic.
Like legalized comedy.
JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee. Hot chocolate.
I don't want to get banned.
Use the coupon code Majority to get 10% off. JustCoffee.coop. Matt, what's happening to me? Matt Lechian.
Yeah, exactly. Put the German on it. Left Reckoning is coming up right after Majority Report. Today we have Ben Fong and Paul Prescott on talking about a new book of speeches from Bayard Rustin that includes commentary on speeches. A really great book, Bayard Rustin, a very interesting thinker. And also, Texas politics giveth and taketh away. We talk about Taylor Remmett's success. David has a inside view of that. And also, Colin Allred's frankly embarrassing a little foray into being offended that apparently has entire Senate primary up in a tizzy down in Texas. Another embarrassing chapter in Democratic Party id poll politics, in my opinion. Pathology's on display over there. So check that out right after the show today.
I think we're probably going to be talking about that video he cut, too. Impressive stuff.
Steam coming off of his head, and I'm pretty steamed, too.
If you're going to come for me, you better come for me.
Oh, yeah. It was that energy. Yeah. But it's actually somehow worse.
It was worse because it was so, like, just manufactured. It was so, like, exhausting.
It's like he, right before he hit record, he was like, what am I supposed to be mad about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Corporations ate my baby on the IM says Sam Peter. So there you go. Folks, see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back, and the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back, and the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a, whoa, what a fucking nightmare.
Nightmare. Bring back
yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
You see, white people doing drugs, they look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on! Come on! Come on! Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.
We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, on the Majority Report, fun half. I was trying to look that up to see if we can see what the...
A social blade?
Yeah. Why don't you look that up? I'd be curious. Ad hominem says, yay, my second favorite fun half song. Listen, I'm not in the business of soliciting fun half songs, but, you know, Brian's here now. He's been here for a while. Somebody wants to send in a new fun half song featuring Brian. I mean, not featuring.
Be
let's not
change.
Get carried away.
Yeah, that's not
too including bad. Brian.
That
including.
Feels better.
Yeah, yeah, let's not.
Be the change you want to see in the world. Instead of complaining about Brian's choices.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is the first time I chose a different song in weeks because I don't want to explain my thought process behind that.
Because you were resented people who told you to mix it up.
Isn't this Fun Half also pre-me as well? I think this Fun Half song doesn't include myself.
Yeah, but we have a Fun Half song that includes
Yes, we do. No, I'm not trying to... Right. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that it's...
We're not taking anything out of the... we're not taking any... we're not taking anything out of rotation. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we're adding one. Okay, well, I mean, that may have done. Look at views, too, though, before we get into this. Okay. Well, that explains that. All right.
Not for the other one, though. Brilliant. The numbers are consistent.
Yeah, I would bet. But, you know, one place is where you go to sort of like crank. Okay, let's dig into this. We're having a debate. Are we looking at cynicism or are we looking at ignorance? And it's, you know, these things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Right.
Yeah.
But
synergy.
Here is Andrew Schultz, and he's on this clip is from The Brilliant Idiots, which he does with Charlemagne the God. It would be a good place. It's a safer place for him because he does another show. What is the other show he got? What is it called?
Flagrant.
And the Flagrant one is where the sort of like he's there and it's sort of more the meathead right wing coded show.
I believe that's the one they had J.D. Vance on. Is that correct? I have to look that up.
They've had other people on, but like the attitude has been that sort of like classic little bro-y, you know, we're just talking common sense here.
Yeah.
And that type of thing.
Maybe JD wasn't on there.
Here he is. Is this an apology? Is he saying he's sorry to people who said this, or he's just...
Saying that the Trump administration's gone so far that even the craziest leftists have been proven right.
Okay.
And we played a clip
it's a little bit problematic to say craziest if it actually was accurate. But
I think he's responding a little bit to the backlash that he got last week.
Oh,
which was because, like, we covered this a little bit where he was talking about the Preddy killing. And, I mean, at the very least, some self-reflection. Let's just hope it sustains itself.
Right. Yeah. And what motivates it is less important.
But I will say that this was a breaking point for me in the way that the administration responded to it. Like, I didn't think what's happening right now with ICE could happen in America. I genuinely did not think that was possible. I thought our institution, I thought the Constitution would hold up. When I see it and then immediately defend it, I start to go.
Now, pause it for a second. Here's the thing that I'm getting hooked up, stuck on. And I want you to think about this. We'll play it from the beginning. The Constitution is just a piece of paper. You need institutions that will uphold it, right? The Constitution lays out what is legal and what is not legal, or, you know, sort of like just broad strokes constitutional, I mean, supra legal. But you need a Supreme Court that will uphold the Constitution. You need both political parties subscribing to the ideas in the Constitution. And, you know, whether Trump or not was able to execute the ICE thing is really a third assessment. So, I mean, if you think this couldn't have happened because of the Constitution, you were not paying attention to the way the Supreme Court has been functioning for multiple years. You have not been paying attention to how the Republican Party has been functioning for multiple years. That Trump would be able to get tens of billions of dollars to create a paramilitary that would be completely unhinged, and attack Americans because of their bigotry, yeah, maybe you could predict that. Maybe you couldn't predict that. But the Constitution needs the Republican Party to actually give a shit about the Constitution. The Constitution needs a Supreme Court who is not essentially reverse engineering decisions based upon what the Republican Party wants.
I think he might admit, I'm not aware of those kinds of things. That might be if you were to ask him. And then the question would be, then why would you have the presidential candidate on your podcast?
Because, why would you opine about this?
Or opine about, like, listen, but you know, Stavi is a great example. Stavros Halakias, love his show, and he's politically aligned with us. You know, he did an Instagram video for Zoran supporting him, but he's spoken about how he doesn't think it's necessarily his role to, in the comedy scene, talk about politics in the way that all of these right-wingers, or whatever Schultz is, the Brogan sphere, decides to do so, because he doesn't think that he has the tools to do that. And there has to be some level of humility. It's not a coincidence that all of these guys with, like, the mothership, the free speech people, who sniff their own farts constantly about the high art that comedy, that stand-up comedy is, and their role in it, because they get to say the R-word on stage or something like that, also have a high opinion of themselves when it comes to weighing in on politics. Like, you have to have some level of humility, and it's not a coincidence that all these are white men who, like, just think the world is their oyster and that they have the most wonderful things to say that everyone needs to hear. Take a step back and understand your place. This is what journalists should be doing. Trump exploited the fact that these guys wanted clicks, the fact that he had a sizable fan base in their audience, to go for softball interviews that greased the runway for fascism. He played a role in that.
Let's go back from the beginning and take it from there.
But I will say that this was a breaking point for me in the way that the administration responded to it. Like, I didn't think what's happening right now with ICE could happen in America. I genuinely did not think that was possible. I thought the Constitution would hold up. When I see it and then immediately defend it, I start to go, we gotta be very loud about this. Like, it all of a sudden becomes not like a liberal catastrophic thinking. It starts to become very reasonable, nuanced criticism of the administration. They have just made the most far left critiques of the Trump administration. Their reaction to this has just justified all of them. In one moment, all of their responses, from Trump to Cash Patel, they have justified every single critic. And I know people will probably look at this and be like, they've done a million other things to justify them. Sure, and that's fair. But this specific situation, I think, is a breaking point, and it has justified all those criticisms. I think people's antennas are way up, and people's antennas that were not up initially.
This is like seeing the Epstein files. So it's like,
wouldn't it be nice if we got those?
It's like, damn, y'all really been lying to us. Like, damn. Like, you really been lying to us. Let me ask you a question. Yep.
I love
but
the
I will
fact,
say that this was...
I love the fact that everybody's... I feel like there's a whole new group of people who have their antennas up when he's really talking about him.
More and more people are saying. Of course, I knew about Frederick Douglass.
The fact is that a lot of people have already abandoned this administration. It's not like Donald Trump's approval ratings just like took an extra big dip. It's been going on for quite some time now. Other people's antennas have been up, even those who were, you know, a little skeptical of the far left that would say, like, hey,
the catastrophic thinking of the far left,
this guy who right. Got a crowd of several thousands of people to bust through the doors of the Capitol building and threatened to hang the vice president, and so much so that, you know, Josh Hawley was running away, and who's that tough guy, who's that
Mullen.
Yeah, Wayne Mullen was like down underneath the seats hiding. That seemed like a little bit of a red flag to, you know, some people. Some people's antennas came up after that.
Yeah, but he was only like 37.
I'm just like, yeah, I guess.
I'm so sick of their self-infantilization. Enough. He's not as bad as Theo Vaughn.
Well, but I'm curious as to why, what it is that made his antenna go up so much. Will you show we have a graph of the antenna rising impetus. This is the antenna rising impetus. This is his other show that he does. Flagrant seems to me like to be the bigger one, or is it? Or I don't know. That's, or it was?
Yeah, that's like the main one with like Akash and the other guys. They had a good year. In the run-up to the election.
But subscribers ebbs and flows. I mean, we've had months where it's like we have like virtually no subscribers, and then other months where it goes up. You got to look at views. You got to look at views. Okay. Well, ooh.
Yeah. That's even
more dramatic.
So the worst month ever.
Oh, boy.
A little downhill skiing just in time for the Olympics.
Yeah, it's a little...
That's the best ROI on that J.D. Vance glazing.
A real antenna generation.
Can some of the testosterone males in this office explain to me?
Maybe check a different office.
Yeah. Hello, all of you. Can you explain to me?
What can I do for you?
I would love to explain anything to you.
Sure. I don't know anything.
Address that way.
Can you teach me how to hammer a nail? And then after that, can you explain to me what the freaking impulse is for these late 30s, near like 40-year-old men to make themselves into like little babies that don't understand the world and then kind of skirt accountability and then also act like they're alpha men? Like they don't... Shouldn't you have accountability? Shouldn't you kind of... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like you own your actions. Own them. Own the fact that you gave a softball interview to Donald Trump. It's very weird how they're always like, it's this bro space, and yet
they act like
those Nelk boys that were like, we interviewed Netanyahu. Oh, golly gee, like who could have seen this criticism coming? It's like, I mean, we have enabled this like.
Well, the Nelk boys were actually on the payroll. Didn't we find that out recently? There's something to that effect.
But only like white men can be like, oh, I'm, you know, I have the privilege to basically be like, have the emotional, intellectual maturity of a teenager and just like shrug it off
and Dave act. Chappelle.
There's some fresh and fit, like those guys. There's some white guys. Yeah. That's the thing is it's men who, men who like all this like insecurity about like masculinity and whatever. It's men who like, frankly, their fathers failed for whatever reason. And there's this absence how to be a man. That it's like, oh, you need to put a woman in her place and tell her to make her a sandwich. You are 12 years old.
I will say this, though. There has been a long line of essentially laughing and making the left, any left perspective left of one's perspective seem like wackadoodle. And then sort of coming back around and like, you know, the Iraq war was actually the right decision until things started going wrong. Yes. So it wasn't until I realized it was a wrong decision that it really actually was a wrong decision.
Those
people who were out
in
front of saying you should not attack this country, they were jumping the gun. In fact, in many respects, had they not jumped the gun, maybe the rest of us wouldn't have had to be so critical and would have been able to see it more. So in many,
it's still the left's fault.
In some respects, we should be apologizing to Andrew Schultz because we made it harder for him to see the truth.
We weren't nice about it
because he was reacting to how completely crazy we were acting.
He felt attacked.
And he felt attacked.
Yeah.
And maybe if we had been nicer about it or not as weird or perhaps a little more manly, then maybe we would
use terms like birthing person.
We just kept the right from seeing it. I mean, frankly, you know, I mean, this, that, like, whole story.
Christy, look what you made us
do. Christy Todd Whitman, I have talked about this many times, but I sat on a set with her at Hayes' weekend show where she made the argument that had the left not been so righteous about climate change, then maybe the Republicans wouldn't have had to have been, you know, reacting the way they did.
Well, I mean, even when the way he phrases it, you're proving the far left critiques right. Another way you could look at it, Andrew, is the left was right. I mean, it's just like we have to go through these cycles of being right too early. I mean, Matt and I were saying Israel's committing genocide within a week of the genocide beginning. Like, you know, where this show was really on top of that. And then, of course, these kinds of things happen. And then people realize it later.
It's premature anti-fascist in the 30s.
But it did honestly never occur to you that, like, the Israelis were like, majority report is already saying we're doing genocide.
Might as well do one.
Might as well do. The point is just like, I'm appreciative that Schultz.
You're going to say that we're genociders, genocidal. Yes. We're just going to genocide.
There's no choice.
I'm appreciative that people like Schultz are recognizing that the left was right about this, or they're proving it right. But just take it a step further, because it's very exhausting to be proven right 6 months before everyone acknowledges that you're right. And it also leads us to fascism. So just say the left is right, Andrew Schultz. Embrace it.
Yeah, I was wrong. Left was right. It's not like a crazy thing. It's I was stupid.
We're going to have to track those views, though, to get a sense of like where we're going with this. That's the thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm the cynical one for thinking that has anything to do with it.
That's why we held the line so much on things like Gaza and whether Trump is bad and going to do bad things about immigration, because we just wanted to reap the rewards when he eventually did it.
That was pure motivation. Playing the long game.
You should try to know politics better, you losers.
If only Polly Market and Kalshi were around so that people could have had a better sense of what the market was saying as to whether we would be heading to fascism, and people could have planned accordingly.
There wasn't any kind of crypto betting on whether or not Trump would follow the Constitution. That's why he had to make his own assessment.
That's why so many people were confused. The market was not providing a good signal.
The weather vane, he just walked right into a tornado.
I know we have to move on, but I thought the Constitution would hold up. Like, it's just such a stupid thing to say when he's talking about violating the Constitution all the time. Like, what do you mean? It doesn't. If the president chooses to violate the Constitution, what do you think is going to happen? It's not magic.
It's like, I think he imagines that Donald Trump is like the Kool-Aid guy and the Constitution is like a wall.
Right.
And he just thought the Kool-Aid guy is going to run into the wall and not break through the wall.
That's exactly what I've heard about that.
But it turns out the Constitution was a little flimsier than he thought.
Yeah.
I thought it was made out of steel. It turned out to be rice paper. What are you going to do? Yeah, we'll get it next time.
It confirmed all of the catastrophic thinking about the wall that everyone had been doing.
Can't even sort of bring himself to realize, like, well, I mean, definitionally, I guess it wasn't catastrophic thinking.
Yeah.
I guess it was
analysis.
Like, it was so catastrophic for these people to be sitting on the beach going, there's a tsunami coming. Yeah. And it was so out of control. It turns out there's a tsunami coming.
Blue-haired freak who's screaming about the tsunami.
Legit, he sounds like Chuck Schumer.
The catastrophizing.
The guardrails will protect us. If not, then the people will take to the streets and stand up for it. Yeah.
Or the titans of industry. The catastrophizing was the folks who said we need to get out and vote because of men joining girls' volleyball games and the immigration, 20 million,
whatever.
Are you
really suggesting that the idea that there was multiple trans girls playing sports across the country in high school sports was not a building catastrophe?
Yeah, I'm saying there was a little bit of a hysteria about that. And I would say this central immigration point, and simultaneously makes all those guys, you can label Andrew Schultz's of the world both Chicken Littles and Hitlers, the way they didn't see any of that coming. And you need to make amends. We played that guy, the reverend, that was in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He's like, I helped build the religious right. the solution isn't to like cut a vertical video so people can click on it on YouTube. The solution is to do a long-term work and make amends. And it's not just like Andrew Schultz saying, "Oh, I guess the catastrophizing was right." Get like activists on. If you want to really do this politics stuff, you can start stealing some of our guests, Andrew. Go ahead, just crib from us.
I mean, it's not like he doesn't have a platform and he couldn't actually start to examine more of that stuff.
Yep.
I mean, just the idea that, like, you know, that was catastrophizing. However, all the stuff I was saying about Tren do Agua and, you know, the coming, you know, sort of like trans revolution.
And the free speech attacks on comedians.
It's hitting for everybody.
Then the idea that, like, you know, we...
can't tell a joke anymore.
Yeah, like jokes are outlawed and all of those things. That's not catastrophizing. That's not running around being hysterical.
You were out, but did you see that in Chicago, that basically Illinois is now investigating that raid at that Chicago South Slope complex? They're investigating the landlord who they now suspect
of
calling ICE. Yeah.
Of course, no. I think it was reported that he did call ICE.
She. But the point being is like that Illinois is already, you know, probing it. But I mean, that was our theory initially. It didn't come out at the beginning, but it was the same thing in Aurora.
Surprise, surprise. Darn it! I don't have it right there.
Oh wow.
Oh, there it is.
Surprise, surprise.
Does anybody even know who that is?
No, it's from some Western from 75 years ago.
Absolutely not. No.
Who is it?
You know who it is, right? Yeah,
is
you
it Full Metal Jacket?
Are you serious?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know it either.
Wow, damn. Do I feel like that is like, I feel like I've
Say
been...
it, though. Who is it?
It's Gomer Pyle.
Who is that?
And continue on with the who Gomer Pyle.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Sounds totally fake.
Maybe that's why I thought it was Full Metal Jacket, because they call that kid Gomer Pyle in Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, but Gomer Pyle is actually, like, it was a show. Jim Nabors played Gomer Pyle. Oh, boy.
By the way, I'm only, like, 18 months older than Matt. I'm not, like...
I know, but your dad, like, made you watch all that stuff.
I do watch
you
all
You were forced to, like...
I don't... Yeah. Everything you... All my references are, like, 60 years old.
Didn't you spend time in the villages?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's where...
Like a month ago.
Exactly. We sent Brian to the villages for like, 8 weeks out of the year. Just so
he can get your references.
My references. Yeah.
That was on his resume.
Exactly.
Like, put him to the top.
It's employee training.
Exactly.
I went to the farmer's market in the villages. I told Emma this. And the first thing I heard were two old people talking. They go, "Rudy Giuliani and Michael Flynn need to be made whole." That was the first thing I heard. I've been saying that in my head for the last month.
Oh, my God.
First thing you hear. Yeah, God, getting passionate about Rudy Giuliani losing his money due to the Georgia suit.
The only farmer's market on earth where that conversation is being held.
Yeah. Not happening at the Park Slope Co-op.
And also they have no fresh vegetables.
It's like empanadas. Donuts.
Oh, God. Yes, it is a Andy Griffith spinoff.
The whistle show.
Yes, but that was with Opie, with Ron Howard and what's his face?
Barney Fife.
And Gomer Pyle was a spinoff from that. He was in the Marines. I think he was the Marines. Yeah. All right, let's move on, shall we? Now that we've. Okay, and Cole from Little Rock says, "Sam, I'm 36 and I get your reference." So there we go.
Feel better?
Slightly. I mean, not really, but a little
Sam,
bit.
Sam, I see you.
All right, so the state of play in terms of the government shutdown, the government has been shut down for 3 days. The House is about to vote as of, I guess, about 45 minutes ago to end the shutdown. What happened was that House committees advanced the five-bill minibus as opposed to omnibus, budget approval, that includes a two-week continuing resolution. So essentially, whatever the budget's been over the past year, just extend it 2 weeks to fund DHS. Apparently, Massey voted with 214 of the Democrats voting no. And it looked like John Rose from Tennessee was going to vote no, but then switched his vote. I think because it's such a they needed to pass it.
And well, when you say 214, that's important to note because it was 213 until like 48 hours ago or 24 hours ago, because they finally were able to seat in that Texas district Christian Menefee. Who is, I think, who is now that 214th vote for the Democrat or 214th vote, right? So that the House margins for the Republicans got even narrower over the past few days.
And so they're going to vote this afternoon, I mean, probably within an hour or two, on the passing this. And then we're probably 10 days away from the DHS stuff. So this has got to be a big fight. Now, understand why Chuck Schumer did this. Remember, this started out of the Senate. Seven Democrats voted to pass the entire minibus 2 or 3 weeks ago.
With increased ICE funding.
And then a couple of those Democrats said, hey, sort of made a mistake. Not, I can't remember her name, but
Lucencamp Perez.
Yes. But Swazi even came out and said, I made a bit of a mistake on that one. And Chuck Schumer said, well, I've got a way in which we can not have to own up to a mistake and still get this off our plates.
Because he could have said, we are not doing a continuing resolution for the DHS for 2 weeks. We're not going to fund it at all. We're going to strike while the iron is hot, while the nation is angry, when they've seen two observers get murdered in front of their face. We don't need to give the Republicans more time to get the heat off of them. The heat is on them when they do this.
Cool the iron off.
Yeah. And he, I mean, I
poor Emma does not get it.
I guess I don't. I'm not playing the dimension of chess that you're
talk
playing.
To the
Chuck.
Baileys.
Oh, wait a second. Oh, I didn't realize we were playing chess.
I guess we were playing checkers.
No, I had no idea. I didn't even occur to me. Oh, I'm sorry. That's my bad. They're hoping that things are going to cool down. And of course, they very well may, because it's quite possible that Homan might say, cool down for a week and a half.
Don't kill anybody for
don't kill anybody, please. Don't kill anybody for the next 3 weeks. And
heard.
And then 10 days later, you know, 11 days out from today, they're going to start. And I will say this. There is a temporary block on Trump's rescission of temporary protected status for 330,000 Haitians who have been here because of things like earthquakes and American-assisted coups, yeah. Essentially, in their country.
I'd recommend looking at the WikiLeaks cables for Levi's jeans and the intervention that the Hillary Clinton State Department made, because they were trying to do too much of a minimum wage increase to still make our jeans.
And the point being, Haiti is still unsafe for people, and 330,000 of those Haitians, the day that judge or that lawsuit is wrapped up and the day that this budget is signed, you're going to see these people are going to be rolled up amongst others. Who knows where else they're going to go? And Chuck Schumer just feels like if he can get through the next 2 weeks, it's the same mistake that Swazi made.
Yeah.
You are not voting on ICE up to this moment. You are voting on ICE all the way to the election.
Right. And AOC makes this point really, really well here. This is, she's been doing these like spots coming out on the Capitol steps, and this is far more leadership than we've seen from the leaders of the party in name only.
So, man, how can ICE be reined in even in these spending negotiations when even if they don't have this spending bill, they still have $75 billion? How can ICE still be reined in when Donald Trump is president?
I think we need to repeal this absolute explosion in funds that has no guardrails or anything in it. So, I mean, there's a legitimate question about the fact that, you know, Republicans passed this in their big, ugly bill, that appropriation in it. Now it's our task to try to figure out how you claw back, like, what has essentially supercharged this agency into becoming a relentless domestic paramilitary that also, by the way, is a blank check to Palantir to create facial recognition scans on U.S. citizens as well.
So catastrophic.
How could she say all those true things that resonate with the American public?
But she's doing it as a woman. And that is...
It feels meaner.
It's just harder to accept.
I know. Stop nagging.
It seems a little bit
Here's the point. If Democrats could just have a guy say that, then maybe we could respond to it in
someone with authority.
Way. But it's just like...
That's what conservative men need, is a daddy figure.
I mean, they're literally calling Trump daddy as we speak.
She was a bartender 8 years ago. I mean, how could we possibly... We're just going to have to let things go as they are.
And she probably wouldn't even give me your number if I asked for it.
Just quickly, 16 goes well with it, too, on the strategy in the House, if you want to just... Yep. Jayapal.
Yes.
Because, like, I meant to make this point earlier. You have Kristi Noem saying now we're going to require body cameras. Okay, the Bovino firing and the Holman insertion and the body camera, like, you know, we're going to voluntarily do this. They are on their back foot. They're demonstrating that they're on their back foot to all of us, and they're trying to do cosmetic changes. Kristi Noem would be familiar with that. To prevent exactly what could happen in the legislative branch, which is like actual substantive change. And there's a lot of Democrats that seem to be falling for this right now. They tend to be over 80 years old or in their 70s.
Emma,
and corrupted by things like the Israel lobby.
Maybe you don't know the saying, when your enemy, your opponent is doing themselves harm, run the other way. You also, when your
call
opponent is winning, you also run the other way. One of the things, the way I always remember these sayings is, you always run away.
I Chuck, that's very consistent for you.
Well, unless, of course, there's some funding for Israel.
Yes.
Then, you gotta stand your ground.
And so they're trying to change the subject. And how desperate are they that they're trying to change the subject about ICE by they'd rather talk about Epstein, literally. I mean, and Jayapal made this point on CNN.
But to me, there's nothing that we're going to get in 10 days that we can't get today. You know, we have right now the opportunity to make these reforms and the changes. And I think Republicans know that we need to make them. Certainly Republicans across the country do. But what we need to do is do it quickly before they try to shift the attention to nationalizing the election or starting a war in another country or changing the subject to whatever it is that they wanted. They never wanted to talk about Epstein until they wanted to stop talking about ICE. So we have a real opportunity and we should use it right now. And that's what I think we're going to have to focus on.
Well, I want to talk.
But to me,
Patty Murray is 75 years old. She just started her latest term. But
spring chicken.
I really hope. And she's in Chuck Schumer's like orbit. One of the horrible Democrats that's always caving. I hope Jayapal is the senator from Washington one day. But she fundamentally understands what we've been saying. We can go back to Biden and build back better. Why are you delaying and bringing the Republicans into the process? Why are you removing your point of leverage? Why are you not striking while the iron is hot? While the iron is hot, she says it there. There's nothing we're gonna get in 10 days, or I'm paraphrasing it, but she's basically saying like this 10-day
we're at peak leverage
is,
now.
Right, is worthless. It's worthless.
MaxVac says, as reported on Democracy Now, they want body cams. They want to scan the faces of every single person they come near to. Of course.
Well, that's what we played, that clip of Calacatan is making that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is basically just means that they can go more hands-free when they want to essentially assault somebody.
And Noma's saying we want more funding for it. Like, I really can't stand like the body cams and that sort of like type of nibbling around the edges, but if it would eat into the giant budget, then fine. Like that's the type of way we need to be thinking about this. But for Noam saying, well, we could do it with everyone if you just give us a little bit more money.
Yep.
Here is Doc Rivers.
Oh yeah.
Coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. Yes.
For now.
Just watch them.
But his politics are great.
The Celtics. No, the Celtics beat them.
Trade Giannis to Minnesota.
But NBA seems to be the only league that is worth listening to their sort of political commentary.
Yeah.
But here is Doc Rivers asked if he stands by his comments about ICE.
Of course. And
that's pretty cool. Okay. I love that. Yeah.
A few weeks ago, you said the shooting of Renee Good in Minnesota was, quote, a straight-up murder, and you called the Browder ICE situation a, quote, travesty. Now that some time has passed, do you still stand by those words? And when you said murder, can you explain if you meant that in the legal sense or as a moral condemnation of the situation?
Both. And I don't change that at all. You know, my dad was a cop. My best friend is a cop. And he's probably more upset about it than me. I thought there's the training of ICE is horrible. You all know that. And being in Minnesota where there's 130,000, I think, documented people, why not Texas, where there's 1.7 million undocumented? I look at our league, look at the NBA. We're celebrating Pioneers Day today, right? And I look at our league and I think, Olajuwon could have been taken off the streets. But we would, right now, the way brown people feel, only the brown people would be taken off the streets. And it's just not right, and it's not morally right. So I stand by my words 100%.
Are you saying that brown people in this country legally should be worried about ICE? I just want to
talk about it. Yeah, we all should be. Yeah, if you're walking down the street, and Tom Holman, who is the head of DHS, has said that they're targeting people by their color and if they can speak the language. If you're brown, you're nervous. Because I don't see anybody going in the Ukrainian villages and arresting anybody. All we can go by is what we see. That's all I can go by. And that said, I'm 100% right about everything. I think we all... Everybody in this room, I would say, wants a safer America. I don't know if what we're doing right now is making us safer. I know those two people in Minnesota would definitely disagree with that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to be busy. I know that, people want him fired from the Bucks. I'm not... But he's got to be busy, but he's capable of seeing what's obvious out there. It's not like his antenna just got raised. And here's the thing that's sort of, I don't understand why it's taken so people haven't fully sort of like internalized this. ICE is identifying, supposedly, is identifying undocumented immigrants, not by warrant, not because they know who they're going out. They are literally trolling around looking for drivers who have a brown tint to their skin in Minnesota, black tint because they're looking for Somalis, and just approaching them and going on a fishing expedition. And if they don't like the way that they're responded to, or if people exert their rights, they will scoop these people up. They will put them, they'll drop them off 10 miles down the road. Sometimes they'll just send them down to Texas. And they are picking up people, not just undocumented immigrants. They are picking up immigrants who are legal in the sense that they are following a legal process. And at one point, like, that should be just completely understood. I mean, that is a Kavanaugh stop.
Yeah.
The part that people maybe need to start to, like, sort of, like, this is where, like, I will give a little bit of grace for people, is that they haven't quite wrapped their heads around the idea that this isn't just bad training. This is not recognizing what the agenda is. The agenda is a purification of this country. That is why they're rolling back temporary protected status. All those people are legal. They are all legal. This is about not just getting undocumented immigrants. But I should say, this is not about getting the worst of the worst, the criminal element who are undocumented out. It's not just about getting the undocumented out. It's about getting rid of all immigrants.
Yeah.
They're talking about denaturalization. So people who have already gotten their citizenship, reversing it. Like,
official government accounts saying they want to deport 100 million people. They're literally talking about ethnically cleansing basically anybody who is Latina or Hispanic or is an immigrant.
This is a full-on fascist purification program.
And citizenship was also used by the Nazis as a precursor to the extermination of Jews. The Nuremberg laws were about stripping citizenship and protections for Jews as a way to make them have fewer rights before they embarked on the final solution. So when we want to talk about, if people want to say that's hyperbolic, I know that the U.S. Holocaust Museum was upset about, I think it was actually Tim Walz, we weren't correct the other day about who said it. It was Tim Walz that had the comparison to Anne Frank or something like that. But no, these things make sense in history and they have overlaps. I was also really encouraged to see, we're not going to play it, but at the Grammys, like basically everybody that won anything except for that idiot Jelly Roll were speaking out about ICE. SZA had some like incredible comments after, one of the best artists around right now, about a mutual aid and standing up and abolishing ICE. She's also spoken out about Palestine and then Bad Bunny won Album of the Year, and he's performing at the Super Bowl, which is previewing a right-wing culture war that we're going to be dealing with after this upcoming weekend, because he's Puerto Rican and he raps in Spanish, and God forbid. And he had this very moving speech too about how we're not aliens, we're human beings, and ICE out, and all of, you know, and he seems an incredible guy. And
yeah,
I don't
how
know.
Incredible would it be if he did a duet with AI Charlie Kirk?
Well, I mean, that's the other thing is, so they're upset, the right is upset that Bad Bunny is going to be performing at the Super Bowl. And by the way, The Athletic interviewed some anonymous NFL players about their thoughts about it. And it wasn't good. Okay, so talk about the NBA being light years ahead of the NFL. But TPUSA is doing an alternate Super Bowl halftime show in protest of Bad Bunny because it's going to be in Spanish.
Featuring
and the fact
Kid
that,
Rock.
Oh, it's going to be Kid Rock?
Kid Rock.
Oh.
Yeah, can't they find anybody else?
Didn't Kid Rock already do the Super Bowl actual halftime show? They pretend to be so aggrieved.
Oh, I don't think he did. I don't think he was ever at that level.
Is it going to be like Kid? It's going to be.
No, he was a part of that whole backlash to Janet Jackson's nipple coming out. Then they just did old white guys for like 10 years, the NFL did.
They're going to do Kid Rock and then have Bo Derek come out and dance with him.
Was Scott Baio?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nah, Kid Rock's not done it.
The wheel Clint Eastwood out there.
He hasn't done it?
No, I can't imagine that's the case.
All right.
Let's.
What do you do, Ba with the Ba?
Maybe I was confusing him with like Creed or no? They just the Dallas Cowboys.
That Sweet
game.
Home Alabama.
Creed did
thing,
Thanksgiving.
Let's do number six and then let's do 25. Or let's just do 25 right now. It's been reported. Donald Trump was on Dan Bongino's show yesterday. And like I say, as you all know, wait, was this yesterday?
Yes. Yeah.
I keep a calendar when Trump is ovulating or when he gets his treatment for whatever it is that he gets. And it said that he was supposed to get it yesterday. Now, it's not exact because
right,
it's every
right.
4 weeks and, you know...
Exactly. Your cycle length.
But it's definitely not exact.
It literally
speak from experience, your cycle length can vary.
Based
exactly. And it literally says in my calendar, Trump juiced, because he's getting something that sort of like gives him another, like, you know, energy. And what's weird is when this happens, he doesn't seem to get out much. And he's been basically sitting in the White House. But man, oh, man. I haven't heard him this peppy. I know some people think this was AI generated and not really Trump, but of course, I'm quite sure it was Trump. But he just sounds so energetic. It's as if like he just had like, I don't know, an IV hooked up to like somewhere on his body, like maybe right here, and got juiced. But here he is. He's so excited that he's talking about basically a one-party takeover of elections in the country.
I feel great. Get me Bongino.
Exactly. Get Bongi on the line, and let's talk about how we're going to take over the country.
These people were brought to our country to vote, and they vote illegally. And the, you know, amazing that the Republicans aren't tougher on it. The Republicans should say, we want to take over. We should take over the voting and at least 15 places, the Republicans ought to nationalize the voting. And we have states that are so crooked and they're counting votes. We have states that I won that show I didn't win. Now you're going to see something in Georgia where they were able to get with a court order, the ballots. You're going to see some interesting things come out. But, you know, like the 2020 election, I won that election by so much. Everybody does it. They put a woman in jail, Colorado, put a woman in jail, a wonderful woman, 72 years old, had cancer, because she was a voting inspector. She was in charge of a voting area, and she saw boxes of votes come in. So she went over to check it, and they put her in jail for voter manipulation, and she's still in jail. And they better let her out fast, and they're suffering a big price, Colorado. They have this woman in jail who's 71 years old and probably has cancer. She's sick.
Probably.
And they put her in because she challenged somebody that was dumping ballots into a box, okay? And they didn't put them in jail. This was during Biden's term. The worst president in history. And we had some bad ones. I mean, look, Barack Hussein Obama, I call him the Great Divider. Right. People couldn't stand him. You mentioned his name, they go crazy. They start booing the hell out of him. We had some really bad ones. I mean, Jimmy Carter wasn't exactly the greatest. Jimmy Carter didn't exactly have the hit on Venezuela that I remember. His hits, they always turned out to be a disaster. Right. He went out, he had a hit. The helicopters were crashing into each other. The hostages and
it's
everything. That's why Ronald Reagan won the election. It was so pathetic. But we do it right. We've got the greatest military. I built the military. You know that in my first term. I built the military, even though they gave a piece of it away. But it was
don't interrupt
a lot. But it's still a piece compared to what I built. We have the most powerful military. And my attack on Iran with, you know, Operation Midnight Hammer, where we wiped out their nuclear threat, which they would have had a nuclear weapon within a month. And we knocked it out. And our attack on Venezuela was, you know, like unbelievable. And the nice thing about Venezuela, we're getting along great now with the government. We talk to them every single day.
Pause for a second. You know, like there's a game sometimes I'll play with the kids when we're driving. Like you got to say a word that starts with the last letter of the word we just said. And like that's sort of how he talks. Like Venezuela, we attacked. But actually, Venezuela is actually good now because we're doing it with oil. And speaking of oil, there's something going on here. He's still going. Let it roll out. I think there's just a little more time, right?
We're getting along great now with the government. We talked to him every single day. We took 50 million barrels of oil. It's on its way right now to Houston to be refined. And we're going to help them a lot, and we're going to benefit by it also. It's going to be great. It's going to be an amazing place. You know, it was a great.
So I'm looking into this. Tina Peters is a 70-year-old woman, and it's very clear to me, based on an initial gloss, that this is somebody who took Trump's bullshit, horse shit, about stolen elections at face value when was in a position of authority and started tampering with a machine and got caught doing it.
She brought in somebody. At trial, Ms. Peters was convicted of helping an outsider, Conan Hayes, a former professional surfer turned technology wizard, this is the Times, to gain unauthorized access to one of Mesa County's Dominion machines in May 2021. Once Mr. Hayes got into the machine, he was able to capture county passwords and sensitive data about Dominion's proprietary software that showed up 3 months later at an event questioning the results of the election hosted by Mike Lindell, the founder of the betting company MyPillow, who's a prolific purveyor of election lies. So she brought in some guy, broke him in. He stole a bunch of sensitive information from Dominion voting systems, and then he gave it to Mike Lindell. And then she went to prison.
The upshot is, though, that she got her own special coupon code and was able to get literally four pillows for the price of one.
Wow.
Yep.
Stuffed with stolen documents.
Exactly.
Imagine your grandma gets sent to prison for believing Trump's BS.
Emma, have you ever seen that Quentin Tarantino with Fiona Apple video?
Yeah, of course, of course.
I think we should just cut out Dan Bongino and put Fiona Apple next to Trump. Yes. Ranting.
Right, right. The video of her just having forced to listen to Tarantino. Yeah. Trump also, just a little funny note on this, he gave her a symbolic pardon because these are state charges, so he has no control over it. So he gave her a symbolic pardon.
Congratulations. Now you'll still be in prison, but
I pardoned.
If you want, you can frame this. You can frame it. Or we could frame it for you. It'll cost $150. We could send you a framed pardon. Actually, that's a great idea. Let's get that out. Let's do an email blast, and I'm going to pardon everyone.
Yeah.
Framed version. We'll do a gold one. We'll do a platinum one.
And you're first in line for the new pardon coin.
That's right.
Oh. Should we do
that? That actually is something you would do. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I mean, he would probably sell a lot of them. It doesn't even make the news that the Trump crypto company, didn't they just do a deal with a Qatari?
No, Abu Dhabi, before I think it was before he was inaugurated.
No, it just came out.
Wait, another?
Yes.
This story came out in Wall Street Journal yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yes, yes. Sorry.
And
UAE.
It was
$500 million investment into Trump's family's
country. I mean, why not? Oh, let's just play this. Let's just play this. I just got one word to say about this. We'll take some phone calls. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. What? But let's put number. What do you got?
I didn't see this Chuck Schumer thing.
Oh, yeah. This is number 24. We give Chuck Schumer a lot of grief for capitulating on this thing, and of course the other day we gave him grief for going out there and saying that one of his jobs as leader of the Democrats in the Senate is to make sure that Israel keeps getting funding for their genocide or their apartheid or for their random bombing. But Chuck Schumer's not a one-trick pony.
Exactly.
Here he is. This is just amazing. Let's read his tweet first. It was an honor to meet with the leader of the Venezuelan Democratic Movement and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Maria Corina Machado to discuss our support for a free and democratic Venezuela. Her bravery and resilience are an inspiration for all who stand for freedom. First off,
First off, I ratioed him.
First off, yes.
Most importantly, I'm the top reply that called him a fascist collaborator.
2,000 likes to 11,000. That's a huge ratio.
And that was a day-old tweet, so that ratio was pretty organic.
I will also say, if you walk out of a room from meeting with Maria Corina Machado and you don't have that Peace Prize, you're a loser.
Yeah. Exactly right. Isn't that a metaphor for it? Trump gets her Peace Prize, and the Democrats get what for supporting this far-right fascist?
I mean,
lunatic.
What?
Yeah.
Like, in what planet does this make any political sense? First off, even the Trump administration who perpetrated the coup know that she can't be president.
Exactly.
So she is just some dude who is never going to be a part of the political process there. I don't even know if you could call her a Nobel Peace Prize winner anymore because she gave it to Donald Trump. She doesn't want to be recognized as that because that way, I mean, Trump's like, wait a second. I thought I was the Peace Prize winner. And now you're meeting with Chuck. What is this supposed to do? It's just like, I mean, it's now like just.
He supports it. He supports a coup in Venezuela.
Of course he does. Of course he does. I saw all those Democrats get up and clap for Juan Guaido. Yeah. But my God, man. Like, why would you post this? Like, who are you appealing to?
What's the upside here?
What is the upside of this as a political question? Like, I don't agree with you supporting somebody who will never be president of Venezuela as a way for you. But who are you indicating what to?
She is like not just, I mean, Guaido, the supporting the coup with him as your figurehead is one thing. Machado is an extremist, like a far right extremist by every definition. She supported the 2014 protests that left all these people dead. That was a far right protest in Venezuela. She has said that she supports the sanctions regime on her own people that has impoverished them. She said she supports military action against her own people. She's been in like the right wing think tank circuit in the United States since the early 2000s, cozying up to Marco Rubio and others. She's literally gone on Don Jr.'s show and said, this is for the oil so American Pillage capitalists us. Can come in and take it. She admits it. And
but she won a Peace Prize.
It's also.
And not only did she win the Peace Prize, she's generous with it. Maybe that spirit of giving, you should get a little bit of that, Emma.
This is the larger problem. Like, this isn't a real opposition. There isn't a real opposition to anything, whether it's just kidnapping foreign dignitaries, because actually there's bipartisan support for that sort of thing. And the only quibbling is over the execution. How do we do this sort of thing? And if it's going to be, well, we can coup other countries, then you can't really quibble with, well, don't just kidnap the guy. Like, what's the difference?
What's amazing to me is that, like, Schumer here, it's almost like Schumer's, like, drafting behind Trump. Like, he's like,
oh, yeah.
All of the policies that Trump is coming out and doing, like, full-throated, Schumer's
like
back
days,
there, like,
3 weeks too
oh,
late.
Oh, don't forget for me, too. I'm doing that. I'm down with that as well.
Oh,
you're supporting Israel? Me too. I'm right here.
And also, like, what I mean, in terms of the polling on on Venezuela and actual military intervention there, it's like something like 70% of the American public opposes it. So do you stand on that? But all he cares about is process.
Listen,
he didn't do it the right way
My number one job, make sure Israel gets funding.
Uh-huh.
Number two, get rid of Venezuela.
No side deals.
No side deals.
Trump
should come out and say no side deals.
I'm going to get out ahead of Trump on attacking Iran. What's taking so long?
Trump's already collaborating with Delcy Rodriguez, and then he comes out and tells Chuck Schumer no side deals with
Chuck,
Machado.
How about this? No side deals. What are you doing over there? Yeah. Going behind my back?
And Trump wants funding for DHS. I do too, but 10 days later.
Yep.
Trump's all over the lot.
He's crazy. Don't make me swear.
Machado's openly aligned with far-right figures in Latin America and beyond, including Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro, Argentina's Javier Milei, and you want to guess who the third person is that this article in The Nation that Gabriel Hetland wrote? Benjamin Netanyahu.
Oh, yeah. Word up.
Machado even penned a letter to Netanyahu. Do you know this, Chuck, that Machado penned a letter to Netanyahu in 2018 asking for Israel's help to forcefully overthrow Maduro?
She's the fucking best.
That is not
I swore.
You swore. That's a
Everybody
leader
heard
there.
Me. Everybody, this is going to go crazy on the ticky-tocky. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
I should have sworn going vertical, right?
We put the switchboard
I'm going to be the beta Riz.
I'm too old for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You just learned that, Chuck?
Oh, no. I don't. They just told me to say it.
Call your senators. Tell them they should not support Chuck Schumer to be leader of the party.
It is past time.
I would say like 2020 was probably.
I mean, but like it's actually a matter of extreme urgency right now. He's narrowing the coalition deliberately because of his ideology.
He has different priorities.
And his priorities. And we need a broad anti-fascist coalition to defeat fascism.
It definitely feels like he is on the way. He feels like, well, you're not going to reelect me.
But that's what I'm saying.
I'm cashing in. I got a laundry list of stuff that they said, don't do it, Chuck.
Exactly.
But I'm doing it.
It's like when a show knows that it's in its final season and they just do all of the ideas that they've been sitting on for quite a while.
Who ever thought that Bullworth would actually be just such a reactionary?
Is that...
I've been told I have only 180 days to live, and so I'm going full reactionary. Yep.
What kind of bull is this?
Okay. That's why I swore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fucking liars, but this Machado, she's great.
Yeah.
What a ghastly picture.
Let's go to the phones. Calling from a 725 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 725.
Hello, is this me?
Yes, it is you.
This is Carrie from Las Vegas.
Carrie from Las Vegas, what's on your mind?
So I called in the past. I live around 2024. I run a Substack called Public Health Policy Reviews. I was subscribed to you. I unsubscribed because my views did not seem to fit with your followers. But I think I'm going to have to resubscribe because finding that the public health information that I get, you're among the best out there. So,
well, the bar's low right now. I mean, to be honest, the bar is pretty low, but I appreciate it.
Right. So I'm thinking particularly about 4 weeks ago, you had someone named Kristen Lyerly on. And she was talking about RFK's assault on public health.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding more and more like I'm having to go come back to the majority report to get good public health information to help me write my articles and essays. So.
Well,
there you go.
I appreciate it, and the only thing I could say is I'm sorry that everywhere else has gotten so bad. To be honest with you, I mean, listen, we have record amounts of measles in South Carolina. We now have measles, as far as we know, in the detention center in Texas. We are getting now. Reports of and testing on like the efficacy of the COVID vaccines, other vaccines, essentially, like we've almost eliminated cervical cancer because of the HPV vaccine, which is now considered like that RFK is going to make, you know, sort of like default against it. It's just incredible. But that's where we're at. I appreciate the call, though. And thanks. Thanks.
Can I plug my Substack?
Please.
Publichealthreview.substack.com. I have a number of international contributors. So what we've been doing, we've been comparing the American public health system against the contributors from those countries in China, Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Germany. And so we're trying to, at this point, promote a book, and we're trying to connect with the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV School of Public Health.
All right.
So if people can support us, that would be awesome.
All right. Publichealthreview.substack. Appreciate the phone call. And I hate to be a spoiler, but those countries, better health care.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the call. Calling from a 678, and then we'll do that. 678, who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, is this me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Chris from Brooklyn.
Chris from Brooklyn. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to share a little bit of some schadenfreude, just what's been coming out with the files. I don't know if you guys have gotten a chance to talk about Peter Attia, but it has been really, really nice to see a lot of the fitness accounts and everybody I follow just kind of being like, what? This snake oil salesman is a fraud and he was around with Epstein? Oh, my goodness.
So did you see the part?
We should just like let people know, because I had no idea who the guy was. He was just hired to, as CBS as a contributor by Barry Weiss,
who's apparently still insisting like that she's standing against the rest of the newsroom.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not familiar with his Instagram work. All I know is that he apparently, when his wife was having their child, like literally in the hospital.
In the ICU.
Yes.
He said.
He was messaging Epstein like.
No, he was with Epstein.
In New York.
He came to New York because of supposedly like work he had to do. And it turned out to be, I guess the work was, see how much information I can get about what Epstein's doing tonight.
It was like he wrote in his book about how his kid was in the ICU.
His wife wanted him to be there.
And he wrote in his book about, like, it was about basically the grind set. And then in the dates, people lined up his emails with Epstein showing that he was actually with Epstein.
Yeah, and I just wanted to also call it a moment on the show Breaking Points. Just a great moment of watching Sagar and Jetty's like face just kind of droop when he had to like talk about Peter Attia, because you know he had been following the guy for a very long time and this longevity expert, but he's, you know, just one of these health quote unquote gurus who are basically giving off very basic advice but trying to patent it and like I think Attia is like a concierge doctor. He charges like several like high five figures for services to very wealthy people to just tell them, you know, eat green vegetables, get a lot of sleep, use the sauna, like stuff that is very just seeing this grifter in particular has been very satisfying.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see the look on Sagar's face when he had to
admit that. I'm so sorry for him. That must be hard.
I'll admit, I had watched a video of Peter Attia talking about like zone 2 cardio training like last year, and then I don't subscribe to him, but then to see him get named by Barry Weiss and then named in the Epstein files for like honestly the most shocking circumstances, it's been a tough week for
people. Emails are super gross.
We should say though that doesn't take away from the advice about you know, be active,
cardio,
eat greens. That's important. It doesn't don't throw out the message with the messenger.
Oh, zone 2 trading might be overstated a little bit, but yeah, anyway.
I think he was also like telling people to like non-diabetic folks to have glucose monitoring, which is very dumb and like can lead to there being shortages of that kind of thing.
Yep.
Like, I also need to be afraid of eating grapes. It's insane.
I saw clips of him talking about the whole like a lard, like sort of RFK style Maha thing too. So he like dip in out of
everything's
that.
Yeah. Got to be tallow.
Are you telling me a longevity influencer doesn't have the highest scruples?
I can personally vouch for him.
But he never finished his residency and any of that stuff. So
that stuff is just add on. You don't need that. I appreciate the call.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Otica Dragon, can you talk about Utah expanding their Supreme Court to bring back gerrymandering? We should talk about that soon. That guy Spencer, what's his face? I can't. He's the worst. He's honestly the worst.
Spencer Cox?
Yeah, Spencer Cox. Mm. You wouldn't know that if you listened to Ezra Klein's podcast, but that's not the point. folks, speaking of insanity and other, like I found this so laborious. I wasn't even like that excited to talk about it, but it's so dumb.
Well, Colin Allred, I interviewed back in my days at TYT when he was running as a Justice Democrat. And he won that race, and he wasn't taking corporate PAC money, and he was a lot more progressive than he ended up being. He ended up leaving Congress and running for Senate and losing really, really badly. And I'm doing David Griscom's, I'm really excited about this, his The Myth of Red Texas. And I've been reading his book because I'm going to be doing his talk. And his opening introduction is literally about all of the failures of Allred's campaign. Yes. And it's on display in this story.
He's a former football player.
Yeah, right. He'll remind you of that all the time.
Well, in fact, he's actually recorded something from his home gym, it appears like.
Manliness.
He can lift what appears to be a lot of weight, but this is a little bit too heavy for him. And that is attempting to take offense. And let's I don't know if we should present this before or after. I think we should present it before. He is responding to a claim made by a TikTok influencer who was on Instagram, who is claiming, who said that Tallarico, running for against Crockett for the Senate nomination in the Democratic Party, had said something disparaging about Colin Allred, who is not in the race.
Yes. Apparently on January 12th, this is what this TikTok creator said. She was in a private conversation one-on-one with James Tallarico, who seems like kind of a Boy Scout, but okay. And he apparently, according to her, said that he signed up to run against, quote, a mediocre black man, not a, quote, formidable, intelligent black woman, referring to Jasmine Crockett, and then being disparaging about the Allred. But, I mean, the black man part seems okay. That wouldn't be great. But his campaign was objectively mediocre, and that might be putting it kindly.
Yeah, which part is the objectionable
part? Well, let's take it at face value that she claims he said this in that way. And then she also claims, according to this exchange, here, put this up, that Tallarico's team deleted her Instagram as retribution. Now,
reliable narrator here.
I will say, if this dude, as one of the contenders for the Democratic nomination in Texas, has the ability to get individual Instagram accounts deleted, this guy's got a very high power level. What's he going to be able to do when he gets into Senate? But regardless of all that, so you have to believe that Tallarico said that Allred was a mediocre black man as opposed to a really talented,
formidable, intelligent black woman.
You have to believe that's exactly what he said as opposed to, a mediocre candidate or whatever. Yeah. And Allred apparently has taken offense to it. And he's trying to make it like it's not just he feels personally insulted.
This is civil rights, too.
This is a civil rights issue.
Morning, everybody. It's cold out here, and I got some steam coming off my head because I'm, you know, just finished my workout. Got some steam coming out of my ears, too. I understand that James Tallarico had the temerity and the audacity to say to a black woman that he had signed up to run against a mediocre black man, meaning me, not a formidable, intelligent black woman, meaning Jasmine Crockett. Let me just break this down into a few segments here. First of all, let me just give you some free advice, James. If you want to compliment black women, just do it. Just do it. Don't do it while also tearing down a black man, okay? We've seen that play before. We're sick and tired of it. We're tired of folks using praise for black women to mask criticism for black men. That's not good for our community. It's not
pause
good.
Pause it for 1 second.
It just, it doesn't work. We know what you're doing.
Listen, I am completely open to the idea that people use praise of black women to denigrate, to tear down black men. But is that a thing?
That's happening here.
I mean, I'm saying, like, he's saying, like, this seems to be, like, an ongoing...
Within the Democratic Party, I think there's people who say, like, black women are our base, they're really great, but... And then cast a side eye at black men for not turning out for the Democrats as much as
I guess, I mean, black women do. The last person who made that argument was Barack Obama.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. This is like when, like, Bernie, ahead of two Iowa primaries in 2016 and 2020, all of a sudden news stories come out saying he's sexist. And then Hillary loses in 2016, and people are saying, well, actually, maybe she lost because America's not ready to elect a woman. And then in 2020, I'm not going to say who said he was saying things about a woman can't win. But then flash forward to 2024, and Kamala Harris is losing, and all of a sudden the standard complaint about all the people is that, well, America's not ready to elect a woman once again. Like, these sorts of things... even if we take at face value that Tallarico said exactly that, which I don't, but let's just, for the sake of argument, say it. Like, the idea that we're going to get scandalized by this sort of talk about politics like this, I think is just a little bit childish.
And it's as if, like, he wanted to sort of say, like, I'm also going to help Tallarico out by doing my mediocre best on this on this video. Because it really is just, like, it feels like... his heart really is not in it. Maybe he should have done it before he worked out. I don't know. But let's keep going here.
But while also tearing down a black man.
You.
Okay? We've seen that play before. We're sick and tired of it. We're tired of folks using praise for black women to mask criticism for black men. That's not good for our community. It's not good. It just, it doesn't work, and we know what you're doing.
It hurts your feelings, Colin.
Well,
that's
first
the
off,
problem.
First off, he said it to one, supposedly, to one individual. He has already come out and apologized. And he was really just, like, leveling criticism at your capacity to be a candidate, which I think he must concede. That's why he dropped out.
But he didn't even really apologize. I mean, he apologized, but he admits that he described Congressman Allred's method of campaigning as mediocre, but his life and service or not, I would never attack him on the basis of race. I have no problem believing that he would say that his campaign was mediocre, because that's honestly a nice thing to say, and Tallarico seems like a pretty nice guy, regardless of, you know, like, well... all things equal, so we don't necessarily, I think you can make a case about, say, the issue of Israel, like Jasmine Crockett versus Tallarico. Tallarico has taken some Adelson money for gambling. Crockett had support from Israel-aligned groups in the past, but she's shifted and been better on this front. Say, I still think Tallarico's statements are a lot better on Gaza and more human.
I think they're both
they're both not that great, but okay, we're deciding between these two. My point is just like, all things equal, Tallarico has a better shot in the general election, because if this is the kind of politics that she's pursuing and the kind of strategy she's pursuing, enlisting Allred to do this thing for her, it is not a winning strategy in what could be the more winnable, one of the more winnable races in Texas in a long time. And you go to Jasmine Crockett's website, does she still not have an issues page? I'm pretty sure she still doesn't have an issues page. And Ed Jermenta made this great point on Twitter last night, like about how her brand was attacking Republicans prior to this race. And that was what was successful about her. She could have done what Graham Plattner's doing, which is just like running against Susan Collins and acting like you're the presumptive nominee, essentially, and going after Republicans. That would have been a pretty strong strategy for her specific skill set. But what she has decided to do is lean into dividing the Democratic electorate in the state of Texas along like racial lines. Yep. And it's compounded by her previous comments about Latino Trump voters having a slave mentality. Do I think that that is a good strategy and the best candidate to take on Cornyn in Texas? Absolutely not. All right, so she has issues up now.
She added an issue thing. Just another point on the...
But it wasn't for a while.
The Israel thing. Like she did the exact same thing Allred just did when people pressed her about the Israel stuff. And she said, how dare you criticize me? I'm sorry, you're a politician. Remove that from your vocabulary, this how dare you. Because the truth is, Jasmine Crockett, she says this, I didn't take any money from AIPAC. She's lying. By omission. Because when you look at the disclosure form for that trip she took to Israel... to Tel Aviv. It was paid for by the American Israeli Education Foundation. It was signed by a guy named Arne Christensen, who works for fucking AIPAC. So, yeah, man. And you can find Arne Christensen all over C-SPAN saying the most gross shit next to Republican politicians with AIPAC behind him on the thing. So, like, this whole thing where our intelligence is insulted, that we can't say Jasmine Crockett is suspicious on Israel, or Colin Allred ran a mediocre campaign, these self-evident truths, that you can't say that because how dare you criticize a black woman or a black man? This is, I'm sorry, this is garbage. This is embarrassing.
It's toxic. And in the same way, you know, the stuff about Plattner's Reddit posts or whatever, I mean, I think people are really sick of these personalized attacks. I mean, Plattner, of course, like responded to it and apologized, but the point, like, it didn't hit him in the same way because people are actually interested in what do you stand for. Yeah. And Tallarico Crockett has gone in the opposite direction of what her brand is, as I just elucidated, like attacking Republicans. She could have been consistent on that and actually been a bit more formidable in this race. I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. But Tallarico has been running for quite a while at this point, and he has an established brand as the antidote to MAGA as somebody who's going to be like a more kind form of Christianity. And it's not my politics. I don't fully share it. But in Texas, I think it's a really good strategy. And she and the focus on the individual all the time with her, when we are seeing in Minneapolis and across the country, mutual aid, neighborliness, community, people showing up for one another, the like clapback crap and me, I mean, even her campaign ad, which was just about herself, I think she's talented, but I think that her politics are as anathema to the national mood as humanly possible right now.
I just want to skip a little bit forward. This is another part of this where he talks about Tallarico, and apparently that can only be like one. Like, it's not my thing either. I'm pretty anti-religion at this point in 2026. But this is what he says about Tallarico's
brand.
This is
so strange.
This is so bizarre.
Because I know you're not talking about somebody who's been better at three things than you've ever been at one. You are not saving religion for the Democratic Party or the left. We already had Senator Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock for that. We don't need you.
What?
You're not saying anything unique. You're just saying it looking like you do.
Yeah, this is nasty.
That's really...
Can we play this? I just find this fascinating.
But Tallarico...
It's just like, this is such... Yeah. I mean, he is bad at this. Yeah. He's just bad at this.
Mediocre is actually kind.
My gosh. honestly, like, I don't really feel terribly strongly about Tallarico or Crockett, whichever one's going to win. And I don't know, maybe that's, it's up to Texas to figure out in my mind on some level. I don't think it's not obvious to me anyways. Let's put it that way. But this guy's bad. And if this is part of, and there's no way he's freelancing this, right? They're saying like, here's what we want you to say.
This is the closing like month, right? Like
we need to go after this thing about religion. And so can you like make it like, I mean, obviously this is an attempt to appeal to the black voter in the Democratic nomination fight for Senate in Texas. I have no sense of how that's going to play, but
if Tallarico,
this just feels so like
it's inauthentic, gross.
inauthentic,
and like when you push these things, you need to have like a narrative that you can hang this stuff on, and the idea that Tallarico is religious because he wants to take over from Raphael Warnock to be the vision of Democrats who are religious is just one of the most, and again, I'm a little bit allergic to the religious stuff, but I can appreciate that it may have more salience in you know, other states. But this is just so ham-fisted. My God, keep going.
But I just want, like, they would have needed to establish Tallarico as some sort of bully or bad guy before this. Like, what Allred's, it seems like it's coming out of nowhere. I think Tallarico comes out looking better, and anyway, go.
This is to the extent that anybody watches this, except for us.
Like, Tallarico never said, Raphael Warnock, you are not
I'm
the
coming
leader.
For your IP.
You're not the leader of Christianity in the Democratic Party. It's me now.
Oh, dude, Allred just dropped a new video. I got to check this shit out.
Oh, did he?
No, I'm joking. Oh, okay. like there's nobody saying that anywhere.
I know, when David told me like there's Allred news to talk about on Left Freaking, I'm like, why?
Anything unique, you're just saying it looking like you do. Okay?
Toxic.
Oh, he's things you're cooking.
And third of all, let me just say to all the young black men out there, all the young men come from tough background, struggle growing up.
Don't listen to people like Colin Allred. It would be my advice.
Wait. I think we know that the big knock on Tallarico is that he talks like he thinks he's the only one who's into religion. He's got that type of like arrogance.
All the young black men out there, don't let anyone tell you ran a mediocre campaign after it was clear that you fucking did it.
And here's some crypto wallets.
Grow up. This is such an embarrassment to the Democratic Party in Texas.
It's toxic.
Well, you can't blame them for him doing this. Go ahead.
No more.
Who maybe think that someday you want to put yourself forward as a leader in your community. It's going to have haters like this are going to show up.
Oh, haters.
Okay. And you're going to feel like you have to be twice as good and jump twice as high and talk twice as well. But you don't have to. You can walk out there with your shoulders back and your head held up high, knowing who you are and the value that you bring. And understanding that this comes with the territory and that there's going to be folks like this.
Is he talking to himself right now?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, there's no theory of collectivism. It's all me, clap back, feud. Let's get some attention on this race.
You're individually validated as a heroic individual. Get out of here.
I was feeling hypocritical because I was loving Ilhan Omar's like clapbacks with Trump where she spoke about herself a lot versus when I can't stand when Hakeem Jeffries tries to like create a fugue with Trump and makes it about himself. But like, you know, as long as that's speaking to some sort of theory of collective change, I don't have a problem with politicians using their own story for that. But this is actually like genuinely destructive. For all the talk about how the Bernie bros were causing all the infighting, are you joking?
Well, yeah.
And they do it on a basis, and the Bernie infighting within the party was about policy and material changes. With this wing of the party, it's feuds in between people and will actually exacerbate, for some reason, racial divides when we are trying to have a multiracial coalition coming together in this moment of fascism. I mean, it's so self-serving and so antithetical to everything that I think a lot of people are feeling in this country.
It's just, you know, it's Hillary Clinton. Do you think ending too big to fail will cure racism? It's just the same shit.
It's also just so poorly executed and conceived. I mean, there's, it's just bad retail politics.
No vision, no focus.
Folks, unfortunately, that is it for us. In terms of our phone calls, that sound means that I made most of you sit on the line for 35 minutes for no reason. And I
it's a fun sound to hear at the end.
We are trying to, I'm trying to get to calls. I'm making an effort. And tomorrow we'll try and do that again. But, you know, it's there's a lot of news. Like, we haven't even touched on, I don't know, a fraction of the
we didn't get
Epstein
the ice,
stuff.
Yeah, right.
Or what's still happening in Minnesota, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Emma's distant cousin. I have an aunt and a cousin who live not too far in Springfield, and people are prepared to resist ICE, CBP, and DHS the best they can. That BS came about because of that lie about Haitians eating cats and dogs. And the way people there came together to protect both Haitians and each other seemed to be a trial run.
Yeah, it's a little concerning because Ohio has a Republican governor. So, yeah, just new frontier of resistance.
Corporations ate my baby. Schumer has one gear. Whatever his conversations with Israel say their goals are. Chuck, Charles out. Rob from Minneapolis, considering protesting outside of a Republican caucus site today, moderators in a Facebook group for my local Indivisible group are telling me that doing so would be illegal, unethical, and counterproductive. Is it not legal to do this? I don't know why it wouldn't be, although maybe if it's a caucus, you might not be able to do political. I know, like, on a primary day, I don't know what you're referring to, but on a primary day, there's a certain distance you have to be from a polling site. So maybe that's what it's referring to. I don't know. Dimpra, I swear I'm wearing the same color shirt, looking sharp. Sammy, thank you. I pray to Pesci. Trump sounds like he has a head cold. Sent with lasers. I'm going to do an MR Fun Half song in the style of Boots Randolph. Nice. You don't know who Boots Randolph is? It's like these boots are made for walking, like horns.
These boots are made for walking was not Nancy Sinatra.
Well, she sang it, but I don't know if he did it originally, but he did a cover of it, but no lyrics. Not Nick Fuentes. Hello, Sam. This last release of the Epstein files broke me. Most politicians from Mexico that I hate have their names in the Epstein files, as well as businessmen from TV and other sectors. This may be conspiratorial, but there's video from a supermodel named Gabrielle Rico Jimenez who fled a hotel in Monterrey yelling, "They're eating humans." If Trump invades Mexico, maybe it's to destroy evidence of Epstein in there. But then again, it's just me. I need a vacation. It sounds like you need a vacation. But, you know, I don't know.
But there were very, very salacious allegations of torture and abuse and all this stuff that we didn't even really get into.
I mean, speaking of the cannibalism thing, there is redacted photos of what looks like meat preparation where part of the meat is blocked out next to, like, chicken or something. So I don't know what that's about. I think that's
a lot
also
of weird
feeding
stuff
into, like, some of the conspiracies.
El Greco says, the gap between what is being shared and discussed regarding Epstein files on social media versus traditional news media feels eerily similar to the gap between coverage of Israel.
Yep.
It has been bizarre. Yeah. And on some level, you know, we're grabbing stuff. You know, we haven't had time to do the full sort of, like, you know, I just got J-Mail, the thing that I think DropSite set it up to go through this stuff. It's fascinating. But
Crystal and Crystal did a great job on Breaking Points. I'll just watch her parts. I fast forward through Soccer. Sorry, but I did want to hear her commentary on it, and they broke down a lot of what was in the files.
Giddy up! Lack of accountability didn't begin with Iran Contra. Robert E. Lee, the biggest traitor, was indicted but never brought to trial. Affair. Sickles up super economy. The undertones of so-called Christian prosperity doctrine is fully evident. Never mind that Christ was never a proponent of materialism. All right. Two
Stay
more.
Stay on the grind, Psalm 38.
Bavarian fish tacos. I feel like most of these podcast men hold these opinions for so long, unencumbered by the thought process, though they are, simply because they can't bear the thought of another woman telling them they were again too soon. And the final IM of the day. Unspoiled woman. These politicians are basically just cutting WWE promos. Fair. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb, but finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess I'm where I lost my drive between the 101